I just had a brief chat with Prime Minister Anwar at the end of the summit meeting, and I congratulated him on a very successful chairmanship of ASEAN by Malaysia, and also Prime Minister Anwar himself on his leadership in steering ASEAN through what has been a challenging and eventful year. And Prime Minister Anwar and Malaysia have enabled ASEAN to achieve and secure quite a number of achievements during this year. For example, we welcome Timor-Leste as the 11th member of ASEAN. We took steps to accelerate ASEAN's integration with the upgrade of the ASEAN Trade Investments Agreement, and also substantially concluded the ASEAN Digital Economy Framework Agreement. And we helped to manage some very sensitive internal issues, including the border dispute between Cambodia and Thailand. We provided humanitarian assistance to Myanmar after the devastating earthquake, and we reaffirmed the five-point consensus on managing Myanmar, the ongoing issues in Myanmar. So these have been considerable steps forward for ASEAN. At the same time, ASEAN also stepped up its engagement with external partners, the traditional partners like China, Japan, Korea, New Zealand, Australia, and America, where we had a very successful US-ASEAN summit, but also with new partners who are interested to do more with ASEAN, like Canada, PM was here and was keen to have a Canada-ASEAN FTA, with the EU also expressing an interest to do a trade agreement with ASEAN, the GCC, whom we met at the first ASEAN summit earlier this year, and then the presidents of South Africa and Brazil were both here as well. That speaks to the possible linkages that ASEAN can establish with new areas like Latin America and Africa. So these are all important steps forward too. So all in all, it has been a very productive year under Malaysia's chairmanship, and we have made tremendous steps, taken significant steps forward. What's important to recognize is that we've always said we are in a transition, a great transition to a multipolar world. Multipolarity itself does not guarantee that there will be rule of law or cross-border cooperation. That does not automatically happen. We have to make it happen. And ASEAN has agency to shape the norms of cooperation and the architecture for cooperation in our part of the world. We have taken steps forward this year in doing so, and I'm sure that Philippines, as the incoming chair, will take it forward further. I would also say that we are taking notes of what's going on, more so than before, because in 2 years' time, Singapore will be chairing ASEAN. And if each successive chair can build on what the preceding one does, then ASEAN will continue to stay strong, even more united, and we can secure a brighter future for everyone in the region.
Yeah, probably you could talk us through about what do you think are some of the key takeaways for yourself in this summit, and also how would you describe the atmosphere in this summit and your interactions with some of the new leaders, such as the Thai Prime Minister as well as the Japanese Prime Minister?
The main thing is, as I mentioned just now, there is a continued strong desire amongst ASEAN leaders to accelerate our integration and to keep ASEAN united. This has always been there. Last year when I came to ASEAN meetings, I already saw it. That impetus remains, perhaps with a more challenging external environment. That's one silver lining in the dark clouds, that ASEAN leaders recognize the need to accelerate our integration and make our single market that much more competitive and attractive to investments. ASEAN leaders also recognize that we cannot be divided. There will be issues, there will be differences, but we cannot afford to be divided. We cannot afford to allow disputes to split ASEAN apart. And I think that's good, that there is a very strong sense of commitment towards that. The dynamics with the new leaders are positive. I had a brief engagement with the Japanese Prime Minister Takaichi, but I will be meeting her hopefully later this year. We are planning a visit that had been arranged earlier, but I believe the Japanese government would like the visit to continue. And then with Prime Minister Anutin, I had a very good phone call with him shortly after he was appointed. We know him very well because he's been in government before. He's got many friends in our cabinet too, because he served as health minister, for example. So he's engaged quite a number of our ministers. And I also had a very good bilateral meeting with him during the sidelines of this ASEAN summit. And I look forward to welcoming him soon for his introductory visit to Singapore.
PM, you had several summits in this ASEAN summit, but besides that, you also had bilateral meetings with Brazil, South Africa, European Council, as well as Thailand, where you discussed collaboration in digital and also green economy. Did you happen to have opportunity to talk to other leaders during or on the sidelines of the summit to discuss potential collaboration with Singapore?
Well, the other discussions may take place at the sidelines, but these will be generally quite brief. The main discussions would be pre-arranged, and then we can sit down, have a proper discussion, and those are the ones that you already know about. But all of these conversations have been very fruitful, and particularly the ones where we have arranged to sit down and discuss, because then you have more time to go through the substance of our cooperation, including today with Vietnam, where we have a very substantive cooperation. These meetings have been very productive.
PM, I have two questions. One is on the ASEAN Championship, mm-hmm. The other one is on Timor-Leste. So on the ASEAN Championship, I think you kind of like touched earlier about, you know, taking notes and so on. I would like to know, how do we intend to support the Philippines during the ASEAN Championship? And, you know, what are your early priorities for 2027? On the Timor-Leste question, I think there are some who are kind of concerned that, you know, they could slow ASEAN's integration. I would like to get your perspectives on this and how are we going to support Timor-Leste beyond the ESTAR's package?
Sure. Let me start with the second question. Timor-Leste applied for ASEAN membership more than 2 decades ago, I believe in 2011. So it's been a long time from their point of view. And quite a few years ago, ASEAN leaders already agreed in principle that we would allow them to come in as a member, but with a roadmap towards fulfilling certain requirements for membership. And more recently, when the ASEAN leaders met and discussed, I believe it was earlier this year, we agreed that they had significantly or substantially met those requirements, and that's why we agreed to accept them as an ASEAN member. They are the last country in Southeast Asia to come into ASEAN. So they, in a way, complete our ASEAN family. But being accepted into ASEAN is just the first step. They will still need to take steps to integrate their economy with the rest of ASEAN in order to fully maximize the benefits of being part of ASEAN. And Singapore will do our part to help them integrate and maximize these benefits. We are continuing to lean forward with capability building programs, and I look forward myself to visit Timor-Leste before too long. Other countries in ASEAN will do their part to help Timor-Leste too, as well as many of ASEAN's partners, including countries like Australia, for example, who are keen and committed to ensuring that Timor-Leste succeeds as part of an ASEAN member. Every chairman of ASEAN builds on the work of the preceding chair. So it's not as though a new chair comes in and takes ASEAN in a completely different direction. Every chair builds on the work of the preceding chair. And so I'm sure Philippines will do so with Malaysia. We will support Philippines as the next chair. And then we will try out to continue that momentum forward. And the momentum going forward, I would say, are in two broad areas. One, we have to continue with concrete steps to bring ASEAN closer together, to integrate our economies more as a single market, and to take advantage of new opportunities, for example, in the digital and green economies, where there are lots of potential for us to do more together. And second, it's for ASEAN to be an ASEAN-led platform or create frameworks and forums where ASEAN is at the center and we can engage with many different external partners, especially as we enter a world that will be more multipolar in nature. And that's something that work has already started. And as I mentioned just now, Malaysia has made quite a good progress in this direction. I'm sure Philippines will continue, and Singapore will also build on that. And we hope by the time we get to 2027, we can make further progress, for example, in some of the ideas that we have discussed this year, like an EU-ASEAN FTA or a Canada-ASEAN FTA.
PM, I have a question about the big guys in the room this time around. Based on my observations at the summits, how did ASEAN community react to the presence of USA and China's Chinese leadership? And how did ASEAN engage the leaders, and what was your impression about how Trump and Lee engaged ASEAN?
They were not in the room at the same time. We had separate meetings with America and China, ASEAN plus ASEAN with US and ASEAN with China. And both meetings went very well because all of ASEAN, every single ASEAN country wants to have good relations with both America and China. With America, the summit with President Trump went well. We affirmed the, or we appreciated the fact that he had spent time with ASEAN, helped to de-escalate the border tensions between Cambodia and Thailand, and importantly, reaffirmed America's commitment to be a partner to the region. As you said, he's 100% behind ASEAN. And ASEAN countries value that because we may be in the transition to a multipolar world, but we are certainly not there yet. And where we are today, America is still a key global leader and continues to play a vital role in the peace, stability, and prosperity of the region. America is still a very important partner for investments, for innovation, for technology, finance, for development and growth of our region. So all ASEAN countries want to continue engaging the U.S. At the same time, ASEAN countries have very good and close, substantial economic linkages with China. China is our largest trading partner, and we are happy to be able to upgrade the FTA with China, and that we are also continuing to do more with China.
PM, you, to zoom out a bit, you said ASEAN needs, you know, bolder reforms to become a more seamless and competitive single market amid a more fragmented global economy. So after meeting President Trump and other leaders this week, how do you see that effort moving forward?
We've already taken steps towards some of these integration efforts. As I mentioned just now, the ATIGA upgrade is one important step to enable us to be a closer single market, the ASEAN single window, our customs integration. Many of these issues are addressed through the upgrade itself. The digital economy framework agreement, not completed yet, but substantially concluded, and we look forward to the signing and the ratification of it eventually. And that, again, will bring our economies closer together and enable us to tap on new opportunities, for example, by facilitating data flows between our economies, so data centers can interoperate across different ASEAN economies, and we can open up new opportunities for e-commerce and for our businesses. So these steps are already being done this year, and I'm sure going forward, we will continue to take further steps to integrate our economies further. It may not be a big bang, and it may seem incremental to some, but what's important is that we are continuing to move in the right direction, and there is considerable determination and commitment across all ASEAN countries and at the leadership level, at the highest leadership levels, to do so.
PM, my question is also on President Donald Trump. I know you mentioned earlier about how he reaffirmed his commitment to ASEAN, the region. But during the summit with the US, were there discussions about the impact of his trade tariff policies on the region? If so, what were these discussions? And did Mr. Trump provide any clarity or update on the sectoral tariffs on semiconductors and pharmaceuticals?
We didn't get into tariffs. The discussions were very much at the broader strategic levels around the partnership that America has with ASEAN countries. And as I said, it's a strong mutual appreciation and desire to keep that relationship strong. I would say something about the trade agreements or the discussions around tariffs, because this is happening. It didn't happen at the summit level, but of course discussions have been ongoing country by country. Some people ask, you know, different countries are signing tariff agreements or trade agreements with the U.S. Why hasn't Singapore done so? And you need to understand, the agreements that have been signed today, like Malaysia and others more recently, are agreements to work out the economy-wide reciprocal tariffs between America and that particular country. We have not needed to sign such an agreement because we have an FTA with the U.S. and we are at a baseline of 10%, and America is not going below 10%. So we are not pursuing such agreements. Others are, and they will continue to do so, but we have not needed to do. The sectoral tariffs apply on top of this baseline to all countries, not just Singapore. Sectoral tariffs, whether be it pharmaceuticals or semiconductors, potentially will apply even after you have signed an agreement with the U.S. But for now, there's still not a lot of clarity around how America intends to apply these sectoral tariffs. For example, where pharmaceuticals is concerned, it has also said that American companies can have discussions, and if you are investing back in America, then you may be exempted from these tariffs. With semiconductors, we have not quite heard how they intend to do so yet. So the discussions are still at a very early stage with regards to the sectoral tariffs.
Prime Minister, during the various summits, your messaging was a lot surrounding unity of ASEAN. You also mentioned about the importance of quick action, effective action as well. What are the immediate results that you are hoping for following this summit, especially you're dealing with a very different United States right now?
The results, as I've said, are already apparent from some of the outcomes of this year's summit. And beyond just signing the agreement and declaring that we have made progress, of course, what's important is effective implementation. And we must make sure, country by country and through the ASEAN Secretariat, that there is full and effective implementation. And we will do so. So I would say, given the uncertainties in the external environment and what we've just described, ASEAN countries in general recognize the need for us to take concrete steps to move forward in bringing our economies closer together. We are doing so even this year, and we will continue to do so in the following years. And as far as Singapore is concerned, this remains a key priority, and that's why we have been supporting Malaysia's efforts. We will continue to support Philippines as it chairs ASEAN next year, and when we take over as chair in 2027, we hope we can make further strides forward.
What exactly is at stake if ASEAN is not united? What is this multipolar world that could affect Singapore and ASEAN?
A lot is at stake. In fact, everything is at stake, because we don't know what shape this new equilibrium will be. We don't quite know where we will end up. All we know is the old rules are no longer apply, or the previous rules no longer apply. The new ones have not been written, and we are in a period of transition. So during this period of transition, as I mentioned just now, cooperation doesn't just magically happen. We have to shape it, and we cannot wait for countries to do it for us. We in ASEAN have to start bringing about these new habits, new norms, new practices, new models of cooperation. We have to do it internally within ASEAN, and we have to put in place the relevant frameworks for ASEAN to lead the engagement with other countries outside of ASEAN. And if we are successful in doing that, then we can ensure that ASEAN remains an open and inclusive platform where all the major powers can engage us and will have stakes in the region. And we believe such a configuration will be balanced, will be inclusive, and will give us the best chances to maintain stability and progress for everyone in the region.